This is the Frogcast.
Since we've had a chance to connect with you, 2 weeks of basking in the glory of the Alamo Bowl comeback. While this episode might not have a Disney movie made about it, we do want to take some time to look back on the graduating seniors of this year's TCU football team from the 2015 season. We're going to look at some of these seniors, the impact they made, some memorable moments, as well as taking the painful task of looking forward to who's going to replace some of these people that have played their last game for TCU. We're going to dig into the Big 12 like clockwork. Expansion drama has fired up from David Boren, the president of the University of Oklahoma. And I'm sure there's plenty of other things that we can take some time to talk about for this football team that we love. That and so much more on this week's episode of the Frogcast. Well, fellas, it has been a couple weeks since we've had a chance to come online here and talk to everybody that takes the time to listen to us on our podcast. A few events have unfolded since then. Before we dig into our topic, the Aggies made a run at Doug Meacham. Turns out that they could not get him. Disney is at least asking questions about the story of Bram and the comeback that he had. And I'm sure that recruiting is heating up with guys that were going after commitments that we've gotten. Probably lose another commit because that's just the way it goes. But in the middle of all of that fury that kind of follows the daily buzz of Twitter, for the most part, of following TCU football, we want to take a moment and honor the people that have given their time for the last several years for this football team. When you look back over the resurrection of the Horned Frogs in the last 2 years in the Big 12, there's really one name that bubbles up to the top. I know his career did not end the way we wanted, but Trey, tell us what you think of when you think of Trevon Boykin.
I mean, you know, I think of one of the best quarterbacks to ever play for TCU. I think about how, I don't know if you want to use the word electrifying, but just watching him play on the field the way he plays the game is amazing. You know, and he's personally up there now in, I would say, my top five of all time favorite TCU football players. He did so much for this program over the last 2 years. I mean, over the last 4 years, but especially these last two. And it's just, it sucks that we didn't get to see him play one more time in the Alamo Bowl. Like you said, it was a disappointing ending, but it's still, for me, like I said, he'll always go down as one of my favorite frogs. And I mean, you know, you look at his career, 86 passing touchdowns. You know, he holds all kinds of records. You know, and my personal favorite, you know, when we were planning the show out a little bit, I happened back when I was working for ESPN, I helped out Ian Fitzsimmons. He was working the TCU Baylor game in 2012 in Waco, and he had a like knee surgery or something, and he was working the sidelines, but he needed help because he couldn't really walk all the way around the field and stuff. So he asked me, you know, knowing how I would want to go anyway. So I got to watch that whole game from the sideline, and it was amazing. But the hard part about it was I wasn't allowed to cheer or nothing, you know, like I had to be like completely. So like I just had my hands in my pockets, like, cause I could not like help myself from, celebrating on the sideline. And like, that was the game. Like, I think we like trucked some, that one dude at the goal line. Yeah, and yes. I think Ladarius Brown had like a couple sick catches. And so that game kind of really sticks out in my mind. And obviously, you know, this year, Holgorsen, you know, giving him a high five. There's a lot of those moments, but yeah, man, he's going to be missed for sure.
Yeah, I asked on Twitter, what are your favorite memories of some of our seniors? And I got a lot of responses from that play you described down in Baylor, his freshman year, after that loss at home against Iowa State in his first start, when he trucked that kid down on the goal line. That was a great move. That didn't end up on ESPN as much as the high five with Holgerson. That was ridiculous. Yeah, anything else you guys think of when you're going to think of Trevon Boykin going forward?
A lot of things, but I mean, it's there's so many you could bring up, because just think about, you know, where he was. I mean, you got the good Baylor game in 2012, but you know where he was coming into 2014. You know, so many doubters, and Patterson brings in Cumbie and Meacham, and you know they're solely, you know, not solely, but a large part responsible for the turnaround. But without Boykin, I don't know what happens. So he, you know, he was at the helm at just the right time for, you know, the resurgence of what we know TCU can be.
Yeah, without a doubt. We're going to spend a little more time on Boykin, as well as the next player that was always on the receiving end of his touchdowns, it seemed, here in just a second. But, Trey, I want to put you on the spot for an awkward question that we're hard-hitting journalists here. We do it the way they do it on Meet the Press.
All right, hit me with it.
Is he unfortunately always going to be remembered for getting in a fight at Pat O'Brien's?
You know, I don't know if that's going to stick to him on a national level. It might. But I think in TCU fans' minds, they're always going to remember that. You know, I think that's going to be hard to forget. Not because it was some brutal crime or whatever. Not that I'm, you know, advocating what he did. But like I said, not because it was such, you know, a hideous crime, but just like how disappointing it was. And I think that's the one thing that's just going to stick with all TCU fans, is like, dang, man, that was just, everybody's going to remember that, waking up that morning and hearing that news. And just, I think everybody kind of had a similar feeling of just like, you know, that feeling in your stomach and just being disappointed. So I think we're always going to remember it. But at the same time, you know, all the positives, the, you know, meeting with Abby at the Iowa State game, and, you know, the incredible moments on the field will always outshine that in my mind. But yeah, it's going to be hard to forget.
Yeah, it's unfortunately going to be hard to forget, but I tend to agree with you. Over time, I think what people always remember was what he did on the field and off the field, in spite of that mark that was so. I hate that it happened. I hate that he did it, and the timing of it could not have been more awkward. And honestly, if Kohlhausen hadn't done what he did, I think that kind of damped the memory of it pretty quick, just because of the comeback and the way that Bram was able to lead us back to a victory. Well, Daniel, to put you on the spot, whenever Boykin dropped back and threw a fade down the right side of the sideline, you knew who it was going to, and it was going to Josh Dotson. Take some time and tell us what you think about the Wyoming transfer, Josh Dotson.
It's crazy, you know, to think that he's the only guy that's ever scored for and against TCU. That's just kind of weird. But, you know, what – it's just ridiculous. Everything he's done is absolutely ridiculous. First team, all Big 12, you know, he's going to go probably in the first round of the NFL draft coming up. I mean, I don't know what else I can say. And then he's just such a great guy off the field too. I get that from, you know, Twitter and all that. And that's one thing I like about all these guys, honestly. But, you know, you always bring up that, your favorite memory, and it was like you just said, if Boykin's throwing a fade down in the end zone, you know who it's going to be. And one of my favorite memories of Dotson, I think, is, I guess, from 2014, the Minnesota game, and he reaches up with that one-handed catch. And that's always going to stick with him, because after how crappy things had gotten, here they come out of nowhere and just light it up. And one-handed leaping catch. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, it's awesome that we get players like that. And it's just, I'm really sad to see him go, but man, he's going to have hopefully a killer career in the NFL.
Yeah, honestly, I can't believe we won another game after he got hurt against Oklahoma State. He was, yeah. I mean, you think about the Texas Tech game this year. That man just put this team on his back and carried us down the field. He's the best wide receiver in TCU history, and there is absolutely no debate about it. Absolutely no debate about it. Trey, you got any other thoughts on Dotson and the impact he had as a Frog over the last few years?
No, I mean, I agree with Daniel. That Minnesota catch will always stick out in my mind just because how insane it was. And then also the Kansas State game from this year, like his, you know, monster catches, just clutch time performance. But, yeah, he's awesome. And I hope he goes to a good NFL team or at least one that I don't hate so that I can cheer for him at the next level. Obviously, I would anyway, but – I don't want him to go to some terrible, like, I don't want him to go to the damn Raiders or something.
I don't want him to go to the Cowboys.
So at least hopefully he goes to a good franchise. But yeah, man, that dude just is kind of almost the total package is what you would want as a receiver with his height, his jumping ability, his hands. I mean, I think he's going to do big things in the NFL.
I absolutely agree. Everybody is projecting him as a first rounder. Hopefully, he's fully recovered from the surgery, from an injury to his wrist. They say he's going to play in the Senior Bowl. I'm actually really looking forward, and I hope if you're listening to this, Frog Vision, that the Senior Day, where they have the workout there at the Sammy Baugh Center, I hope that they have a video of that. I would love to see a live feed of Dotson out there working out for the NFL scouts because he is going to make some cash going in the first round, I believe. And my only real hope is that he goes before Corey Coleman. That's really all I care about in the draft. Oh, man. Well, one of the guys I wanted to highlight is a dude that will not get the pub that clearly Dotson and Boykin will get, but will be, I think, almost just as missed because of the dirty work, and I mean that in the best and the worst possible terms, the dirty work that Davion Pearson did playing defensive tackle for TCU. You know, when you think about Pearson, when you think about what message boards are always saying that the Frogs are lacking, it's a 300-pound-plus defensive lineman that goes in there and occupies two offensive linemen. Well, that is Pearson. He was double teamed all year. You go back and look at the tapes of these last few seasons, and that dude just pushes linemen around, knocks the crap out of quarterbacks, and he plays with this. It's this edge that if he's on your team, you love it. And if he's on somebody else's team, you think he's dirty and he's a thug. And that's why I love Pearson. The two images that I'll always have of him is I'm sure everybody will remember the Peach Bowl. And every time he was in the backfield knocking around Bo Wallace like he was just a punk, you know, knocking down running backs, throwing up that land shark and taunting the Ole Miss sidelines. That was awesome. That's the snapshot of the guy you want on your team that is not on the other team, that if he's on somebody else's team, you'd hate him. But the other one, I think Trey mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I found the YouTube of it, actually. He's walking off the field from Tech this last season when we won the game on the tortilla tip.
Yeah.
And their band is playing their alma mater, but all of those, you know, GED, cigarette-stained teeth fans are throwing bottles of water, they're throwing rocks and batteries, and Pearson comes right down that tunnel, and he throws up the guns up to all of those guys very slowly as he walks by, and I was like, that guy is awesome. I just wish that there was some punk kid that would have taunted him, and he'd have come over and grabbed him and thrown him on the field. That's Pearson, and I absolutely love it. I want a classy group of kids playing, but if you don't have three or four kids like Pearson on your team, you're going to lose.
You know, I kind of zoned out. Were you talking about going into halftime?
I think it was at the end of the game.
I swear I saw it going into halftime because I was wondering, I'm like, man, you're awfully cocky because they were losing, you know?
Yeah. So no, the YouTube I saw, it was kind of grainy, but it's 57. And it is, it's at the end of the game because they're playing their alma mater and they're booing and you can see the scoreboard in the background. And they're just, you know, clearly disappointed that they had just lost that game, and Pearson is soaking up every single minute of it, and I was like, walk slow, dude. Enjoy every minute of this.
Yeah, you're right. That's some of the stuff that I love it, but when other players do it, I'm like, man, they're trash. They're dirty.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
I mean, I just hate them. Like, look at Baylor. That's all they do is trash talk, and I hate them. But for some reason, when it's the good guys, it's just fun. So,
oh
but
yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss that because, I mean, as fun as that tech stuff was, man, that Landshark was awesome.
That was awesome, and we don't have any bad blood with Ole Miss. That was awesome though. Yeah. Well, one of the other seniors that we're going to miss that I have a feeling we're going to be playing, that we're going to be seeing on Sundays is Aaron Green. I know you've been high on Green all season, Trey. What are you going to miss about Aaron Green, and what are some of the memories you're going to take with you?
Well, you know, he's the Nebraska transfer. That's Aaron right. Green. And I guess we'll probably
right,
always,
Sorry,
always be that.
San Antonio native, Nebraska yeah. transfer.
But... Man, just his consistency. Obviously, he'll always kind of be remembered as, you know, for the tortilla tip, talking about that Texas Tech game. He had 10 career 100-yard rushing games for the Frogs. And, you know, he was just solid, consistent. And I think if you know, TCU was in a little bit different system where they kind of ran the ball a little bit more, he could have been even more productive. And so, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know, obviously not a scout. I don't know what kind of, you know, prospects he has at the next level. But, you know, I maybe could fit in on special teams or hell, even play running back. I don't know, but he was, you know, solid, and TC really lucked out being able to get him from Nebraska.
Yeah, I think it was David Ubben that actually wrote this, that was on the show earlier this year, if you'll remember, that he said the first big recruit that TCU landed when they got in the Big 12 was Aaron Green. Because even though he didn't come here straight out of high school, he's not transferring here if we're still in the Mountain West. He might be looking at Tech. He might be looking at Baylor. He might have looked at something like Oklahoma State. But he could tell that this was a program he was going to fit in, and he could tell that we were in the Big 12. So... I think that you can't really put a price on the impact that he's had. Because I thought we were going to drop off last year when B.J. Catalan was hurt and ended up being out for the rest of the season. And it's almost like our offense went to another level when Aaron Green went in there. And I don't say that with any disrespect to Catalan, who was a total hoss. You know, what Green was able to do to keep that offense humming last season as well as this season is borderline amazing. Well, one of the other fans that – or when I asked the fans what player they will miss and the impact that they had, the most mentioned player by a mile was Colby Listenbe. People wrote in about how Colby Listenbe retweets everything they tweeted him, about how they ran into him in the mall and he took 15 minutes to sign an autograph and to get a picture taken. People talked about how they bumped into him on campus and he was the most, you know, enjoyable, respectful, humble, yet confident young man that they'd ever been around in the TC program. Colby Listenbe is kind of, in some ways, I feel terrible for the guy. I'll talk about it here in a second. But when he was healthy and when he was on the field, I don't think there was anybody in the country that was able to cover him one-on-one. So, Daniel, when you think about Colby Listenbe and the impact that he had on the team these last few years, what do you think of this senior that's graduating that clearly has a future in front of him, whether it's the NFL or the Olympics?
Yeah, first thing when you said Listenbe, all I could think of is I'm going to miss that speed. He is so stinking fast, and he qualified to try out for the Olympic team, I believe, didn't he? So, you know, that's just unreal. But, you know, I think you're going to allude to this here in a second. This year didn't quite get as well as far as stat-wise. He didn't do quite as well. He didn't play quite as well. He had an injury. But still had some pretty good stats. I think he was fourth in total receptions, maybe third on the team in yards.
Yes.
So, you know, with Dotson out there, it was such a killer dual threat, and you throw in, you know, a Turpin or a Solanina or something like that. It's unreal. So, and another thing that I always liked was that he played quarterback in high school, so he was such a good option for like a good double pass, like we saw in the second play of the Peach Bowl. So it you know, versatility and just outright speed that you're not going to catch. I don't know what else to say. I mean, that's just he's just an unreal athlete, and it's just gonna suck for him to go.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss him a lot. I think you alluded to it, and I alluded to it, but he was so banged up this season. You know, he got hurt in the SMU game. He didn't get back to Iowa State, and he got hurt in the Alamo Bowl. And I just don't think he was ever 100% after that injury against SMU. But you know, even this season where he was not 100% of the year, you know, he caught that big touchdown pass from Sawyer in the Oklahoma game that we almost won.
Yep.
And he was just, when he was on, man, there was just no stopping him. I think the part that I feel so bad for him about is, you know, he got one pass in 2012, his freshman year, and that was in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl when Boykin rolled out and threw it as far as he could, and he couldn't outthrow, you know, with Boykin's arm, they still couldn't outthrow Listen be speed. And so I don't know if he could have redshirted that year. I don't know if we could have gotten another season out of him. But he had one catch that year. 2013 was just, you know, I don't think anybody remembers anything from that season. And then last year to see him light it up and then have to deal with the hampered injuries this season, it was tough. But I think we're going to see him also have a chance to play going forward. Well, one of the guys that I did want to highlight that is another senior that was from San Antonio but did not transfer from anywhere is Derek Kindred. And the memory I'll always have of Kindred is it was a game we've already highlighted. It was against Kansas State. It was early in the second half when we were down by double digits, and Peanut, which is his nickname, picked off a pass, ran it back for a pick six, and that was the moment where I thought, we're not going to lose this game. You know, this is the quick turnaround that we needed in order to gain some momentum. And he was essentially Sam Carter this season. He was the one that knew where everybody needed to be. If we thought the secondary had problems early in the season, the only reason it wasn't worse is because we had Kindred to not only cover it up with his ability and his knowledge, but to basically be another coach on the field to get everybody where they needed to be. And that's a fellow that made impacts. I think the memory that we'll all have, though, is he had two memorable hits this season. Of course, the first one was at Iowa State, where they're on a kickoff. That'll show you how hampered we were with injuries. You got a starting safety that's not 100% on kickoff, and he goes and lays that dude out, and Boykin does the face that becomes the meme the rest of the season. And that was an amazing hit. The other hit was the one that Vernon Adams tried to put on him. I mean, you go back to moments that changed the entire offseason. It's when Vernon Adams tries to pretend like he's a bulldozer against a four-year starter, and Kindred goes up and just lays him out with Adams trying to lay him out. You know, gets a concussion. He's out the rest of the game, and the rest is history. And Kindred was smart enough to not get called for targeting, and because of that, we were able to get a big win. You guys got anything else you can think of on Kindred?
Well, I went back earlier getting ready for the podcast, and it's kind of amazing. And I didn't, you know, even go into this, like, looking for these numbers, but I was just looking, you know, in 2012, he played in 12 games. In 2013, he played in 12 games. He started every game in 2014 and this year. And, I mean, that dude was durable, and we know he played, you know, injured this year. It just shows, like, I mean, he was definitely, if you weren't going to bring him up, he was somebody I was going to bring up because he, like you said, really solidified the defense this year, kept that group together back there. And, yeah, it's you know, back-to-back years, TCU is going to be losing some key pieces in the secondary. But, you know, we'll obviously probably talk about it later, but he's going to be a big piece to replace for sure.
Yeah, he is going to be a big piece to replace. And I think what I love so much about Kindred is even though we're going to get 4 stars and 5 stars and all that stuff, Kindred was a 2-star safety, and he had one offer, and it was to UTSA. And it was a couple weeks before signing day, and Gary Patterson offered him a scholarship, and the guy comes in and plays, you know, what, 50 games or something ridiculous like that, because Patterson's like, this guy can fit in my system. Everything we need done, he's able to do it. That is a quintessential TCU player that's got us to where we're at. I love Kindred. I love everything about him. Well, one of the other pieces that's going to be so dang hard to replace is special teams. Trey, Jared Oberkrom won games, tied games, kept us in games that without him, I don't even want to think about what our record would be. And every time he took it, the field, I did not have a heart attack of insecurity that he was going to miss it. We just knew he was going to make it. What difference has Oberkrom made kicking at these last 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you go back to previous years before he was there, there was always, you know, a little bit of nervousness. Anytime TCU had a big kick, you know, you go back to some of those Utah games and, you know, just gut-wrenching. Yeah, gut-wrenching defeats.
He's out of school now. You can say it.
Right. And him just solidifying that position in these 4 years has been great. You know, I think most TCU fans' kind of fondest memory, at least for me, is that game winner 37-yarder against West Virginia in 2014. That was awesome. And this year against West Virginia, he had that 57-yarder, which is the TC record, I believe. And just consistent last year, you know, 22 of 27 on field goals this year, 21 of 25. That's another piece, you know, the senior class like Kindred that we were just talking about, you know, consistent contributor for 4 years, not just, you know, gets playing time as a senior or a junior and senior. This guy contributed his whole career at TCU. I don't know what else really to say besides, you know, he was clutch and it makes me real nervous about next season.
It makes me nervous, too. I watched the video of the West Virginia game this season where he hit that 57-yarder that you mentioned. I think it would have been good from 65. The air that he got underneath that and the distance that he had was ridiculous. That is a kind of durability and dependability that the next guy just won't have. I mean, I hope that Jonathan Song is a great kicker, but he will not be the Big 12's all-time leading kicker like Oberkrom will be. And that is quite a mantle to carry from a conference that's built itself on offense. So, well, Daniel, I am going to put you on the spot here. I need you to pronounce the full name of our starting left tackle from this last season. Can you do that for me?
I believe that'd be Halapulavati Vaitai.
Congratulations, sir. I will buy you a beer the next time we are in Fort Worth together.
I'm going to hold you to that. Whenever that might be.
Whenever that might be. That's right. That's right. I know that offensive linemen don't quite get the recognition that they should. Nobody does a Sports Center highlight around offensive linemen. But clearly, Big V, as we will call him, was a contributor of this team. What are you going to take away about the impact that he had on the 2015 Horned Frogs?
It's the size that he was and the skill that he had, you know, doing his work on the offensive line. You know, he was great, but I think as a leader in the locker room, he really, you know, everyone loved the guy. He's a super nice guy. And, you know, he was just that type of person that you need as a senior and even, you know, as a junior, to look up to lead the line. You know, was it him? Maybe it was somebody else. If they weren't in, I can't remember, but I think I could be wrong. If they weren't in, it just wasn't quite the same. But he's that type of guy, and it's. I think he'll be replaceable as far as the skill on the field. But, you know, he's just that type of leader and someone who can carry the team that, you know, you don't always get. So I'm definitely going to miss him as well. As far as like a favorite, you know, it's hard to come up with a favorite memory or play or something. At least I can't think of anything for an offensive lineman. So I'm just going to go with anytime he opened a huge hole and we got a nice run.
That works for me. Every time the quarterback didn't get sacked was a really good day for Big
V. There you go.
That's right. Well, I'm going to close out and round out this celebration of seniors with recognizing Joey Hunt, our center, who started not only almost all of 2013, 2014, in 2015, all the way up until I believe it was the Oklahoma game. So he didn't start against Oklahoma, didn't start against Baylor, didn't start against Oregon, obviously. But that is a lot of durability and production that you can get from a 3-year starter on the offensive line for TCU. And this is the only way I know how to talk about the difference that he made. And I want this to be, Joey, I'm sure you're listening to this podcast, but I want to make sure this is heard the right way. When we go back to look at 2013 and just how difficult that season was, I don't remember anything that went right. And one of the things I remember never quite went right was our inability to snap and receive a snap in the shotgun. And so we had so much difficulty even making the most basic things happen. And I'm going to put all of that on the offensive coordinators. And so we get this breath of fresh air that comes in. And then right away, we have this ready-made NFL to be lineman that is starting at center that is just like a pillar of production and dependability. Not only do we have, you know, a clean shotgun snap, I mean, this is a guy that is pushing around big linemen in front of him, opening up those holes like you mentioned, Daniel, but more importantly, able to keep those people in the center, even a blitz off of the quarterback. One of the difficult things that I've been able to pick up in the Meacham Cumbie offense is that the center is the quarterback of the offensive line more so than in other systems, and that they have to call the blocks, audible and acknowledge the blitzes. They have to deal with all of that up front. And to have his mind, he's an academic, all Big 12, to have that mind up front that is able to seal that line and give the quarterback the time that he needs to make that kind of stuff happen, good for him. He got it. Not only did Boykin get a system where he could thrive, Joey Hunt got a system where he could thrive, and that he was able to have such good production these last 2 years. And I don't think you're going to be surprised to see him play on Sundays going forward as well. Well, those are the 9 seniors that we took the time here to celebrate tonight. I want to thank them, as well as so many others that we didn't highlight, for what they did for TCU, what they did specifically these last 2 seasons, and just all of the victories that we've had in 2014 and 2015 in the way that they helped make it happen. Well, with all of this talent, especially the talent that we didn't even take the time to talk about exiting the roster, we got to talk about the roster going forward. We've got good recruits that are on campus that are going to take their spots. We've got guys that have transferred in that I think are going to be able to fill some big holes. And we got some young and green fellows that are going to have to step in and produce if we want to see them thrive, if we want to see the Frogs thrive going forward. So I am of the belief it all kind of starts and ends with the quarterback. So, Trey, I just want to kick it off to you to start here. We got a lot of options at quarterback. I know it's easy to say Kenny Hill, but we got a lot of options at quarterback going forward next year. Who do you see stepping in to fill the role of Trevon Boykin, and aware that we don't need this person to be Boykin? What do we need to see happen in order for the Frogs to be a 10-win team next season?
Well, you know, I'm assuming, and I think most people are, correct me if y'all aren't, that Kenny Hill's taken over the job. Obviously we haven't seen him play since his A&M days, but just based on what we've seen from Foster Sawyer and that, I think he's going to come in and at least get the first shot. I think he'll win the job. You know, if he, you know, can't get it done, then, you know, I think, you know, we might see Foster Sawyer. But I think that, you know, anytime you have to replace a quarterback the caliber of Boykin, you know, a Heisman caliber type quarterback, you're going to see a little bit of a drop off. But I also think that's okay. You know, he doesn't have to be Boykin because he's still going to have some decent weapons around him. You know, we saw in the Alamo Bowl all of those young receivers, and, you know, there's still some talent at running back. So he's going to have those weapons. So he doesn't have to be, you know, amazing, incredible, and carry the team. He just has to be solid, you know, make the right reads, don't turn the ball over a lot. And I think, yeah, with the talent that's coming back on the defensive side of the ball, I think the defense is going to be really good again next year, which also gives him a little bit more room to breathe, you know, because I think that defense is really going to, you know, limit the scoring of the opposition. So you might not necessarily have to put up as many points or make as many big plays. But, you know, we've seen kind of what it did at A&M. I personally like us, you know, not us, but TCU turning to a player like Kenny Hill, who is already has big game experience, you know, in the SEC. I'm not trying to prop up the SEC, but he played, you know, against really good competition in that conference. So it's not like we're having to bring in, say, a true freshman or a redshirt freshman, or even Foster Sawyer, who, yeah, has played a little bit, but not, you know, quite as much as Kenny Hill. So I'm looking forward to it. I think he wins the job, and I think he's a good, you know, his style of play is going to fit this system well.
I agree with you. I actually agree with everything you said. I only have one big fear, and that it is forever going to be A&M transfer Kenny Hill, who brings yeah, that SEC experience to the Big 12.
Yeah,
he's been on the biggest stages. I mean, he knows how to win. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we will definitely hear that, but, you know,
so
it is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, they're going to be saying that in Oklahoma and in Houston, too. So
they got kind of the Aaron Green Nebraska transfer, like, on steroids.
It will be. It will be that. No, I think that Kenny Hill is going to start, if you believe 50% of the message board rumors, that he has his head on straight. He's in a good program where he's thriving. He's got the best quarterback coach that you could ever ask for in Sonny Cumbie, and that he has really thrived in this offense. They said the scout team was a heck of a thing to stop with Kenny Hill playing quarterback. So I think I do think you're all jokes aside, he has played some big games. He's won some big games. I mean, A&M did start where they start 6-0, 7-0 that year. He won some big games. He played some good teams and performed well. And so whatever off-the-field issues that are honestly none of our damn business he needed to sort through, you don't get to do that at Gary Patterson's team, and everything seems to have been okay in the year that he's been here. So I think we're going to see a really good quarterback come out there. Well, to tie it into one of the other things that we had to replace, I want to echo in and agree with you on the defense too, Trey. When I think about James McFarland at one end and Josh Caraway at another end, and you got Ty Summers that's going to have all of that freshman garbage out of the way and just playing like the beast that he has been the last third of the season, in a secondary that is not scared about covering five wide, I start getting excited about that defense next year. I know they got some growth to do, but my goodness, they are going to be in a good spot for to thrive next year, because basically they got – what do they got? 80% of the team back on defense. They lose Kindred, but
Tejada back, which I'm real excited about. I think he's going to have a big season next year.
Yeah, Tejada, Sammy Douglas, everybody. Yep. You know, there was a bunch of garbage that he wasn't going to be back. Everybody that I listen to that I trust says Sammy Douglas is in the program. Sammy Douglas is going to play next year. So that's going to be
a freeze coming
about
back?
Mike Freeze.
It's coming back. I heard they had a vote as a team vote, and they voted yes, and that they're going to bring him back. So either that or going to junior college at Tyler, one of the two. Mike Freeze is going to immediately be one of the greatest players ever. He's the best that never was. I love that you two chimed in at the same time to say that.
Mike Smith, that's one of my other favorite Horned Frog legends that never really, you know, stepped onto the field, really.
Yeah, in the crappy part, if you watch his high school senior tape, it was the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen in my life.
Now he just hangs out at Chipotle.
Yeah, now he just hangs out at Chipotle, that's right. Or the Wii Lounge that closed 3 years ago, so... Well, Daniel, you've been a big fan of some of the wide receivers that we had this year, whether it was Doxson or Lissenby and some others. Who do you see stepping up to fill specifically those two gaps? We've got medical injury guys returning. We got freshmen that are going to be sophomores and growth along the roster. What do you see that we need in order to thrive at the receiver position that's so important in this offense?
Well, first, we're getting Deontay Gray. He medical redshirted, right?
Yes, I understand he's going to be back. I know he was on the practice squad at the very end of the season.
Okay, so there's Deontay Gray. Emmanuel Porter, he should be a pretty big factor in that. And those are the two, as far as I know, the tallest guys. So, you know, at least for Dotson, he was pretty tall. There's a good replacement there. There's also Jarison Stewart, Jalen Austin. They got some time and did pretty well. But also incoming is the number one wide receiver in the junior college level is Taj Williams. I think he's already on campus.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's that, and I'm looking forward to that. He looks really excited to be a Frog. And also Isaiah Grant, if he sticks, and I'm hoping he will.
He's on campus, too. He enrolled early.
Oh, did he? Okay, well, then yes. I read something wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
I take it back. I was reading that thread earlier, and I guess I read an old post that hadn't updated that part. Okay, so, well, there's both of those. So we're pretty stacked at wide receiver. You know, any of the options they choose to go with. And then you've still got your Terrapins and your Slaninas that can all be shuffled around to however they need them. Man, it looks good.
It looks good. We've got every class that we've had since Meacham and Incumbie have gotten on board. We take four or five wide receivers in every class, and we need every single one of them, as this year showed. So, yeah, I love the talent that we have returning, as well as who's coming, who we've got on campus now. If you've got Taj Williams, number one wide out in the country, JUCO, Emmanuel Porter, and then you just put in the slot, if we go five wide, then Gray, Slanina, and Turpin. And that's not even getting some of these guys that score big touchdowns in bowl games like Jalen Austin on the field. That is going to be a heck of a wide receiver core. So I feel really positive about that. I guess I wanted to ask you guys this, because the only area that I don't feel positive about next year is running back. We got Kyle Hicks coming back, who seems to be dependable and sturdy, but not flashy. They say Sean Nixon is going from slot to running back. And then after that, we're down to Travaris Johnson, that I'm gonna be polite about. You guys can say whatever you want. And then Shea Wu is on campus, and he's gonna probably play running back, and I hear good things about him. And when we're still chasing a couple of running backs in recruiting trail here at the end of before signing day, I think that's the only place that we can say we will have a production drop off from what we know now. Do you agree with me at all?
Did you mention Hicks?
I did mention Hicks, yes.
Okay, sorry.
I like Kyle Hicks, but...
Yeah.
See, where I'm at is I really like Nixon. I think that he has the potential to be... I mean, if he's... You know, he looks really good as a receiver, and so if they think he's better as a running back, then I'm excited to see him as a full-time running back.
I can go for that.
So I'm excited for him. But, yeah, I agree. We probably will see a little bit of a drop-off, though.
Yeah.
For a while, you know, Green just didn't seem to be performing up to his standards. And I'd be like, put in Hicks, you know, put in whatever. And whenever they did, I was pleasantly surprised. I don't know what was ailing Green. It might have been who knows. But he just, for a while, was consistently – underperforming, and when they'd swap in the new guy, he tore it up. So who knows? I mean, he might even be better, as it turns out.
Well, I hope so. I really like Kyle Hicks. We flipped him from Texas, and I thought that was, you know, anytime we can steal a recruit from Texas is a good thing.
Right.
Yeah, he's quality. He is going to produce. I wouldn't be surprised if he ran for 700 or 800 yards next year. I'm just saying that in terms of When Green got his chance last year, you could tell this guy's going to have a great season. And I'm hoping that Kyle Hicks makes the most of the opportunity that he has. I have zero doubt of his desire to do that. So I just want to be clear about that. But that just looks like the position on the offensive side of the ball. And I feel more confident about our offensive line than I do our running back core. So I just – boys, if you're listening to this, please, please, please prove me wrong. So – Any other holes on offense, defense, special teams that we haven't mentioned yet that you guys are curious about how we're going to plug those holes as we wrap up this section of the show?
Well, just one, and I mean, we kind of mentioned it earlier when we talked about him, but replacing Joey Hunt, I mean, I think, like you said, he, you know, does a lot of the calls. He was experienced, a really good center, I think, should have a chance in the NFL. From everything I've seen also. So I think replacing a player like him is going to be important also.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We have to have a center. It'll be Austin Schlottman. He's got to have a good connection with Kenny Hill, which I think is 50% of making all that work, is that they're able to kind of read each other's minds of when they're ready and when to snap it and when to wait and all that kind of stuff. So
he did, I think you're right. Well, there at the end, covering for Hunt.
He did. He did a great job.
Like surprisingly well. I mean, I was surprised it was that well.
I just remember he shut down Andrew Billings, and that is not a small task.
No way.
Who's going to the NFL, by the way. We should all be glad about that. So, yeah, I think we're going to – I think that's going to be a big hole to fill. But, you know, I feel confident about the offensive line. I think for Austin stepping in there to be the new center for next year, I think most of it's going to be classroom work. You know, this is how you handle a 3-4. This is how you handle a 4-3. It's what you do when you read a blitz. And all that just comes with time and repetition, which I have no doubt he'll have an opportunity to deal with. So – well, in closing, it's almost like clockwork. We have to talk about this subject because it just got brought up and beaten to death in the media and in the message boards, because this is all that we can talk about in the offseason as a member of this particular conference. It seems as if it was 10 minutes after the Orange Bowl was over that University of Oklahoma President David Boren goes to the Tulsa newspaper and just gives this dissertation about the trouble of the Big 12. About how the Big 12 needs a title game, which they had gotten a waiver to have with 10. But it's not just a title game. They have to have 12, at least 12 teams. And if we don't have a conference network, basically, he is announcing the demands that he is announcing the terms of his demands and of what he wants in order to secure a future of the Big 12. Now, part of me just pisses me off that we can't have an offseason that's not driven by this ridiculous drama that can't be solved in one meeting. But the other part of me says, damn it, he's right. I just put my cards on the table. He is right. If we don't get a sustainable league that is something more than the punchline of every other league, we are going to lose our two anchors, at least one of our anchors, and we have to have Oklahoma and Texas to make the Big 12 be what it is. So I'm just going to throw this out there for you all to consider. Are you sick of this? Is it something we need to act on? Is Boren right? Is Boren wrong? And in the end, does any of it really matter if University of Texas isn't on board?
I mean, I just feel like, I guess, a couple of things. Yeah, there's a part of me that agrees with him, but then there's also another side of me that somewhat disagrees. And, you know, I either think, okay, let's either go to 12 and have a championship game or stay at 10 and not. But I think it's dumb as hell to have a championship game after playing a round robin schedule. I just don't think it makes sense. I mean, if you look back at like this year, Oklahoma would have turned around and played Oklahoma State again. And I don't know. I mean, I guess you can also argue that beating, you know, another, well, what I'd hope would be a quality team, the second place Big 12 team, or, you know, the second place beating the first place one, you know, would help them get into the playoffs. But I just don't like that idea. Going to 12 and having a championship game would be nice. I just don't know who those other two are that you're going to add. I'm just not really big on a lot of the options. I don't like BYU. I guess I'd be okay for Memphis, I guess, but I'm not really for SMU or Houston, so I don't know.
Oh, hell no.
But I do think I would love, I guess, I really want a Big 12 network, conference network.
Yes.
I just don't see the Longhorns giving up the Longhorn network, but I feel like it's like, you know, for the betterment of the conference, I don't know if they even really care, but that would be great to have a network. So I don't know. I mean, he makes good points. I can see where he's coming from. But this conference, man, it's just, I'm glad that TCU's in it, but it's also like, damn, it's just every time we are in a conference, it's never quite stable. It's always a little rocky, and it's
just
like,
there's always something, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Daniel, do you agree with Trey?
Well, yeah, I don't know. For David Boren to go to a public forum like that, just immediately right after the season, you know, it sounds like it's more politicking than anything. I don't know if he's trying to get some kind of public support or exactly what he's doing. I don't really know their intentions, if they're trying to truly make the Big 12 better or if they're trying to bitch and moan to position themselves to make a jump for something in the future. I mean, what do I know? I don't know anything of that high of a level, but that's just some guessing. But, you know, there's... I agree with Trey. I want a Big 12 network. I would watch a lot of the Big 12 network. I have watched one thing on the Longhorn Network, and that's because nothing else was on, and they had the 2005 Rose Bowl on that one time. So, or one of many, many, many times.
They show it every day.
Yeah. Well, I just happened to find it when I couldn't find anything else to watch. So I watched it because I wanted to watch some college football. But good Lord, you know how many more? I think so many more people would watch a Big 12 network than a Longhorn network. I don't know why it is the way it is necessarily. I mean, I sort of know why. Anyway, but it, I don't know. I also agree that a conference championship game with 10 teams in a round robin is silly. I like that they voted that we can have a championship game at 10 teams, but that doesn't mean they're going to do it necessarily. I think they're just, I don't know. I feel like they're just kind of weighing their options. I don't know, but I also don't know who the heck do you add, if you're going to expand. There's just not that many great programs out there. And the best options I always see is somehow to poach teams off the ACC. But to go for, you know, these crappier level schools, I don't know. I mean, some might have said that about TCU, but it's just kind of a odd and kind of crappy situation.
Yeah, it's a never-ending odd and crappy situation. I wish Boren would have gone to the University of Texas president and been that blunt and demanding behind closed doors. Maybe he has, and we just don't know. But going in wine into the paper, I did not like that. And I want to add the caveat that I agree with every single thing he said. I do not want a 10-team league. I want a network for the Big 12. I do not want a title game with 10 teams. And I want to secure a Big 12 that has a future beyond a legally binding contract or the grant of rights. So when people ask me who should we expand with, it's a little more difficult than who's got the best team or the best market. If you have a network, your expansion options get so much bigger because you can be the Big Ten and add Rutgers. And the only reason you add Rutgers is because New Jersey has 15 electoral votes. I mean, like every single person in New Jersey and in Manhattan and Long Island gets cable or Dish or DirecTV. It gets the Big Ten network and you pay for it. And you're paying at the premium level in order to get that. So they just absorbed millions and millions of people onto it. But if you don't have a network, it doesn't really matter who you add because you're just trying to get the best team. And in a sense, that's why West Virginia and TCU got into the Big 12 because they just needed the best two programs that were available. So if we add a network, I don't hold any lie about it. I want Tulane and I want Central Florida because everybody wants to go to New Orleans and everybody with kid wants to go to Orlando. And Louisiana has recruits and Tulane is a top 30 school in the country. And UCS has Disney and a bunch of TV sets. I mean, like that is simplistic as can be, but that is what I would do if I was Big 12 commissioner for a day and an expansion was in front of me. The best options if we don't have a TV network are unfortunately who Trey and I don't want. I'm sure you don't like them either, Daniel, but I don't want BYU, but they're the best pro football program available. And then Cincinnati, who I don't want, you know, I don't want Cincinnati, but
well,
I'll take them.
Cincinnati, at least you'd be up in Big Ten country. I like your idea of Tulane because you'd be right smack in SEC country. But also adding Tulane and in Central Florida, that really helps with West Virginia as far as, you know, geographically. BYU seems absolutely insane because as far as we go with West Virginia, now you're going to go even further with BYU. You know, we're spread out. You know, college football is supposed to be regional. And you go too far and it's just not going to work.
No, in an ideal world, we would have added Nebraska and Arkansas. But that's just not going to happen.
Well, that's their problem. And
that is their
problem. But that's their fault.
Yeah, it is their fault. We see what Nebraska's done in the Big Ten, which is nothing. So, any other thoughts on realignment you have, Trey? I know you've had some sharp opinions about this in the history of the podcast, let alone the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, y'all pretty much touched on all the points. It's just, I think, you know, I would be down for 12 teams. It's just like everybody else. What are those other two teams? And I wish, I don't know, I guess I just wish the Big 12 was in a position to be aggressive and maybe see how interested one of those ACC teams are, you know, something, you know, a better team than, like y'all are mentioning. I'm totally against BYU. They kill conferences. They're, you know, geographically not a good fit. SMU doesn't bring anything. You know, I was in a Facebook, I guess, not argument, but conversation the other day. This guy I kind of know went to SMU, was posting about kind of these comments and saying, you know, they should add SMU in Houston because he's like an SMU guy. And I was talking about maybe – I was like, well, I would much rather see like Memphis and the Florida school or something like that. And his argument was like, it's not necessarily about markets anymore with all the cable cutters. It's just about like eyeballs. And I'm like, well, even though SMU is in Dallas, they don't bring – eyeballs, like nobody goes to their games. So how many eyeballs are you going to get from Dallas? And then if you bring Houston, I mean, Houston's pretty much already owned by the SEC and the Big 12, so that market, I mean, is whatever. So I just don't see those two. I don't know, I'm just not for more Texas teams and not for BYU. So, you know, it leaves us, you know, I guess the Florida schools and Memphis and all that, but it's like, I'm not like high on that. But at the same time, you know, I see the argument, like, who really cares? You know, Memphis is good at basketball, but like, do we really need to add two really, really, really good football teams? Like, you know, look at the Big Ten and, you know, SEC to some extent just beaten up on the lower half of their conference. So it's like, well, why can't the Big 12 do that? I mean, if you got
that's Texas, my argument.
Yeah, like if Texas could get good again and say, you know, you got a strong OU, a strong Baylor, a strong TCU, so you have four really strong teams at the top, and then occasionally you'll have Oklahoma State mixed in, maybe a Texas Tech once in a blue
moon. West Virginia.
So I mean, I think that's you've got some strong teams in this conference. So I don't know. I mean, I'm glad, I guess, I don't have to make the decision because it is a hard one. But, yeah, I don't know, man.
I just don't want to get left out again. That's really what it comes
to. I know. So I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. One of the guys I follow on Twitter that's one of the writers for a message board for Kansas State, he's a big advocate of expansion because he thinks if Oklahoma isn't happy, they're going to find a way to leave and screw everybody. And he says, it's real easy. We can add two AAC teams or we can play seven AAC teams. Pick your poison. Which do you want? And I'm like, that kind of reduces it down. You know, all right, Oklahoma wants two teams. Give them two teams. If that makes Oklahoma happy, I don't feel like I'm getting used. I feel like I'm getting to stay in a great league. So,
yeah, add two teams that are good in other things besides football. I mean, as you travel up north and further east and stuff, you get the basketball teams. Big 12 is already like the best basketball conference. And some really good basketball teams, which will further push TCU further down the totem pole. But as far as basketball,
we suck.
Yeah, I just watched the game earlier and it was awesome.
I did too. We suck so bad.
But
oh, it's defeating to watch that.
But man, that place is so nice now. So anyway, the new Schollmeyer. Anyway,
Cullen Davis's house was nice too.
Well, anyway.
That's a Fort Worth joke, sorry.
Yeah, beat up on some team. I mean, I don't know. Everyone's focusing on let's add these good football teams. Well, there's really not any, unless you want to count maybe Houston. So, which that doesn't, they know. So,
Houston's coach will be in Austin next year.
So. Yeah. So, anyway, I was just kind of a spur of the second rant. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling we could talk on and on about Big 12 realignment. And chances are, if you're on one of the message boards like Killer Frogs, you will talk about this for page upon page upon page. And everyone will agree. That's the beauty of realignment. So, well, fellas, as always, I enjoy our time together. It is the off season. It feels like it's going to be the longest 8 months of our lives waiting for the 2016 Horned Frogs to kick off. But luckily, we got recruiting. We got realignment. We've got spring ball. We got plenty of other things. I just want to keep our listeners posted that we do have some more special shows on the way. We're hopefully going to have a podcast about recruiting that we're going to drop a couple of days after signing day. So you'll get an in-depth dive into all of the recruits that TCU has signed and has on campus, and we'll get on campus this summer, as well as some other celebrities that we are lining up to come that work in college football, work in pro football, that are going to come online and tell us about TCU, talk us about what they do and the perception of the Frogs in places outside of Fort Worth and outside of the Big 12. So as always, for Daniel Southern, for Trey Fallon, I'm Jeff Mitchell. Thanks for listening to the Frogcast.